Okay. Steve and myself looked at the on-site electrical at both locations, the Upton Hills Ecological Awareness Center and the Tottenville. So, our goal was to look at the electricity used for the geothermal system and the lighting systems at Taubman Center. In an interview with Carrie Valentine, who is the campus electrician,
director of facilities,
he told us that LTU was part of DTE's energy savings plan, and it's going to allow LTU to make some changes to the lighting in the building over there. So,
I'll just add a couple points to that. The DTE Energy Savings Plan is a program that was set up in Michigan law that requires DTE to offer incentives to upgrade electrical systems and components to more energy efficient ones, such as lighting systems, heating and cooling, you name it. If it's electrical, it's on this list. And LTU wanted to become part of this because you're receiving such a high rebate, it's approaching 50% directly cost. I mean, it's handy here. Here's $100 for a new light bulb kind of thing. So it was really nice, and they wanted to take advantage of it.
The only problem is with our timeline and getting the equipment here, we were a little late getting it installed to provide a comparison between the old equipment. The old lighting fixtures and whatever they're using over there, and the new stuff. The equipment that they ordered actually came in. The equipment that we ordered actually came in the same week that they were doing the new installing the new equipment over there. So it was just bad timing. They had already installed it, so that you know any of our information that we provide for them isn't really going to help at this point. Out at Upland Hills. What we wanted to do was compare the building's electric use to what they are producing on site from the solar array as well as the wind turbine. And then we can determine the loss through the distribution system. I don't know if anybody here is really familiar with the systems, but the PV array generates DC power, which then goes through an inverter and is converted to AC power, which can be used in the building. The wind system actually produces three-phase AC power, which is then converted to DC power, which is then converted back into single-phase AC power, which can be used in the building. So we imagine that there would be a lot of energy loss through this process. In both locations, the findings would be used to compare to similar buildings and quantify the use of energy-efficient lighting, heating, and cooling systems. So the proposal was to use the equipment purchased from OnSet and monitor the electrical energy patterns at both locations, validate the efficiency of the energy-efficient lighting and geothermal systems at the Taubman building, and to validate the efficiency of OnSet electrical production from the wind turbine and the solar array at Upland Hills. For our equipment, I'm not going to run through this. You guys are aware of most of the equipment. Just some specialized equipment we use for ours were the current transducer, the transducer and the transformer. What these do is measure both AC and DC current. You need separate transducers for each. As well as a temperature sensor. One thing that we were kind of interested in looking at was the temperature at the PV array to kind of determine how this PV array performed at different weather conditions. A solar radiation sensor, which would measure the amount of light that's actually hitting the PV array, and then we could determine how efficient that array was. Our wind speed sensor, which anybody that was at the site that day realized with us that we weren't going to be able to get that installed because the tower was a bit rickety. And then just a couple of input adapters so that the information our sensor were collecting could be fed into this data. I'm not going to go through each of these again. just these current transducers obviously measure the current. We have two installed currently, correct, at Taubman?
Yes, right now there's the two AC current transformers are installed on the third floor electrical room, monitoring LP3, and that's the lighting panel that supplies all the lighting needs for the third floor. I do have some graphs that will be shown here momentarily.
None of the current transducers or transformers are installed at the third floor.
Do you have recommendations that you have where to install those transformers?
Again, the temperature and radiation wind sensors, just some more in-depth data on what those do. You know, obviously they're going to measure temperature and the solar radiation loading, and then we can take that data and look at how our systems perform under certain conditions.
So this is our installation. We received tremendous amounts of help from a facility firm here under the direction of Terry Valentine. The on-site electrician, Jim Bates, provided a wonderful walk tour for us, showing us everywhere or every location that panels were located. He even took us up on the roof for a first-hand roof tour, which made everybody jealous. But, I mean, he proved very invaluable to this whole operation, and unfortunately, he did go out into medical leave for some back problems, so that sort of sparked some issues for us. So now we had to transfer all of what we knew and go with somebody else, and that was, so he kind of led us into all these different locations so we can start gathering some data. Unfortunately, because of the timeline when the equipment came in, we didn't have much time to start looking at every floor. We wanted to get a 1 to 2 week time frame to analyze each floor and its lighting patterns. Not installing until November 12th, we really started pushing how long we can monitor for. And once December came around and trying to get everybody's schedules coordinated, we did have a lot of problems. So I'll show you these graphs of what we have thus far. We're at level 3. You can see on these peaks here, this is when the lights are on. And what's interesting to see is it comes on at about 7 o'clock, you start seeing these peaks. So this is when the lighting's coming on in the building, when people are starting to come to work. And then it stays pretty constant throughout the day, a couple of peaks here and there of when one light goes on in the office and another goes off. And then I believe it's towards like 9, 10 o'clock is when they kind of shut off in the evening. And then this is the 1 week schedule for it. And I believe this was the weekend right here. And I came back out Monday morning.
Is this just for the fourth floor?
This is just the third floor.
The third floor. So they don't have any correlation between the daylighting and the lighting that's installed? They don't correlate them at all?
Yeah, what do you mean?
Whereas if they have enough light coming in, and we know from other reports that there's a lot of light coming in, that some of these lights get dimmed or turned off.
There are some occupancy sensors throughout the building.
My understanding is they're not on photo cells at all. They're all on motion sensors.
Yeah, that's what
they're
the data is kind of telling you.
You would think
if those systems were functioning properly, you'd start to see sort of drop down as the sun came on and pull back up.
Right.
But ours are pretty much flat across while the building's occupied.
So they're all motion sensors.
The lights are staying on all day.
Yep. What really would have been nice is if we had this equipment installed in early October. That way we could really get that comparison of the old lighting compared to the new amount. What they did change out, specifically on Columbia, was the overhead lighting in the atrium area. They changed those from the metal halide bulb, 400 watt metal halide, to 100 watt fluorescent. So there is a dramatic savings right there that would have really shown a contrast in current usage.
Yeah, and those are not on active sensors anymore. Pretty close to 24 hours a day.
Is there a reason that
they come on? No, those only
come on. Yeah, I'm sorry. Maybe they only come on in the evening. But because they're lighting a general space, you know, they're not on an occupancy sensor, so it's not like they turn on when they're lighting sensors.
And the reason for that is it's aesthetically pleasing.
So even though that is in there.
A LEED certified building has to be aesthetically pleasing as well. So all the students are out at 10:30 in the evening, 11 o'clock at night. They want to be able to see the glowing atrium with this beautiful white light and with the blue LEDs. And it really does look very nice. But it consumes a lot of electricity. And, that's one reason for changing to the 100 watt for us. So all the areas of lighting changes was at the DPE one stop and admission centers. They changed the, I don't know what was existing, I believe they had a contact for instance to LED lighting. So that would also show a pretty significant current usage change. And it just would have been nice to see the difference comparing the different charts. Okay, Upland Hills, we don't really have any of our own equipment for our particular group installed. What we primarily worked on was running these data lines into the conduit. And we did have some problems with that, with the fish tape not wanting to go through. And, it's typical installation problems that you always run into no matter what job you do. So we wanted to get those up and running. And Ryan was very helpful in getting our data lines connected and hooked up. And that's where every data line is supplied the tooling and the wire. So thank you, sir, for the platforms.
We appreciate it.
That's where we kind of stand right now. And I'll provide a map here real quick. This is not really a map, but it's more of a wiring schematic of
other manufacturers.
Oh, is that? Okay, I'll show it afterwards. Okay, as you can see here, the limitations of the data cable are trying to prevent desired installation. So this is where we started running into some of our problems. So, okay, well, three of us are up and up on hills at 1 o'clock. We have to leave by 3. Well, two more are getting here at 3:30. Where is the Passover? What's going on? How are we coordinating all these activities? Well, we have an hour and a half to drive there, and we have an hour and a half to drive back. And, trying not to harp on too many problems that occur, we just didn't have the resources to properly install our equipment. We didn't thoroughly plan ahead to get all this stuff installed.
So those are, you want to make recommendations to the next class.
There you go.
It's very valuable, and I want you to know that.
Oh, yeah, just what we learned from problems, I believe, is more important than anything right now, especially for the second group coming in, that we experience these problems so that we can prevent them in the future.
It really was a full day, maybe 2 day effort with everybody out there to do it. If we wanted to install that lines, maybe looking back, we should plan a long Saturday to get everything clean and have to do Saturday and have to do Sunday.
Okay, so here's just a breakdown of the conflict that we did have, which we will plan on sharing for the upcoming group. So the time schedule, that's the scheduling of other students and faculty here in LPE, trying to get those interviews and tear down time to meet with the campus electrician. So they leave for the day at 3 o'clock, and our class goes at 5. So, again, those conflicts. Resources, data cable, we're limited to 100 meters per data locker. Running 50 feet of cable per wire outside really chews into that 300 feet limit. And then because of budget limits, we have to share some of our equipment. So these temperature sensors are only 4 of them. The airflow sensors, solar radiation sensors, all those things add up and they add costs. And we have to share them because we only have $3,000 to spend.
Well, actually, it's $5,000.
Oh,
$5,000. Well, we have $200 or $300 left because I had already ordered equipment. I want your opinion on this. I ordered equipment with the idea that you guys would choose what sensors you wanted based on what you wanted to do. Do you think, looking back, and I should have just said, okay, this is what we have, choose from what we have, do you think that would have been better because you could have gotten started earlier? Or did you like the idea of being able to select these sensors and equipment?
Well, I think if there were, you know, certain things that you knew would need, like a couple temperature sensors.
Okay, I probably should have done that, yeah.
Got those ahead of time. Because that, what, you know, we had some of the equipment, but until we got sensors, we couldn't hook anything up.
That's true.
So I think even if we were to decide there was something that we had to decide, like, this week in class.
Yeah.
Really, we spent 2 or 3 weeks working on a survey, and then another 2 weeks putting our equipment list together, when really we should have just sat down the first day of class and said, okay, what's everybody interested in? Here's what we need to order.
Do you think you would have known enough to do that at that point?
Like for our particular case, we didn't use any of the survey data in our research. And I think there's a couple other groups that did not use the survey. I mean, the survey was great. It provided vast amounts of information. It's all useful in some way. But as far as the direction of where we were going, it didn't necessarily guide us to where are we going.
Okay. So maybe dividing the class up would have been better.
Yeah, I think if you just like reorganize how the groups are made, instead of like having a group for each different ecosystem in the building, have like an installation group, like just an equipment group right away, and then you have like a survey group right away, and so then
just half the class, start out.
Yeah, and then half the class is working on the equipment, and they can get stuff installed right away, while the other class is figuring out where you want to install that, because it's easier to go back and adjust where the equipment is than to initially install it.
It's so the first time we did it, so we're all
working. Even if it's installed in the wrong spot, you can just go back and move it a little bit, and it's not that big of a deal.
Can you guys write these down, include these in your recommendation? Okay.
I think we also have underestimated the technical knowledge that was required for this equipment. I mean, just as pre-ordering the U30 data loggers without the analog inputs,
you
really
put
an amper on, you know, you could use the analog inputs on the U30 logger without having to use an adapter. We could use them on the DC current transducers without using an adapter. I mean, it's nice to have all smart sensors, but we're not going to be able to utilize them anyway because we're limited by length of wires. So, but that's something that you really can't, unless you know, like, that's how it's going to work, you can't plan for it. So we did underestimate the technical knowledge that was required.
One comment, since we're talking about the other equipment and wire links, one thing that we didn't pick up any of is they had basically something to plug two items into one wire.
Oh.
So that may be something that would help, you know, free up some of this, you know, cable length issue.
What was it called?
Like a Y, like a pigtail kind of thing?
Yeah, I don't. We may be able to, you know, just wire one together. That may be a possibility.
Okay.
You know, part of the thing is we need, you know, the logger in a room, the sensors in a room, hook everything up and check if it works. And
before going to the field.
Right. Essentially, what happens by the time we got everything was like, okay, the loggers need to go out and start collecting data, and you know, there wasn't a lot of opportunity to.
To
figure out, oh, how could we do this more effectively or verify things.
Were those 2-to-1 connectors really expensive?
I don't recall.
I don't remember seeing them, but I'll look for them.
They're probably, what, Emerald's 40 bucks?
Oh, okay.
I don't recall. But just based on how that backplate piece connects, you know, that expansion port, I have a feeling there's a good chance we could just, you know, connect 2 input ports to one wire and make that work the same way. I think they're just
parallel connector.
Yeah, I think it's just, you know, wire 2 into 1.
Another thing was the tools that were required. Mm-hmm. Just the tool for crimping the wire in. The screwdrivers, the screw guns, and all that stuff. You know, you got to make sure someone in class has that stuff that they're willing to share.
My idea is to keep getting grants, getting more and more equipment each time I get a grant, and eventually
to a mobile sustainability laboratory. So we could be sitting out here and providing a 1,000-square-foot place we could go and work, you know, to test things out, but you could also drive it somewhere and share it with the world.
Yeah, $350 is awfully expensive.
It is awfully expensive. But that's how we're tinkering on. But it provides an extra classroom, too. You know, space that we're running out of space, even though it say the numbers are down, but it's hard to believe with the number of classrooms.
And with the Talmud, going back to the technical knowledge, we did, when we did hook up our sensors, we found that one of them wasn't working. As should, it was just sort of flat lines, and then every now and then we get heat.
Have you done that bad?
Well, we're not sure if it's a calibration issue again, or if it's a dead sensor, because of installation. Installation, because there is an adapter that we plug both sensors into to take our analog signal into a digital signal. So there may be a conflict with it deciding which one it's going to go through. You know, we're not really sure. We have to call onset to figure out and diagnose the problem. And then the readout is a millivolt. And what we're trying to attain is the current flow through the wires that have been sampled. So we have to find that conversion of millivolts. What is the magnetic field being produced in millivolts? What is that equal to in current at 277 volts of current?
When you're talking 3 to 8 days.
Yes.
Yeah, that's more complicated.
And then, again, I just point out that the data logger shouldn't have those analog inputs, so we're going to save some money on the cost of the adapter, which, you know, in the big scheme of things, wasn't that much, but it would have provided a lot of time savings and complications and installation. You know, those sort of things that really bad in this type of situation.
I'm going to make one other little comment. One thing that I found that actually worked out to our advantage of winding up with those separate, with that external input adapter, where I installed it was a significant different or distance from the logger. So I only had, you know, a 3 foot, you know, analog signal, that voltage signal to that adapter, and then it was a digital signal, the, you know, 50 feet back to the logger. So that may have actually, in that small case, worked in our favor.
We had another data locker. Does it need the length of cable, or just the nature of the way things are laid out there made it so long?
Well, when you have to put the, you know, trying to centralize that data locker in some location. So you wind up setting that in a closet where, you know, it can connect to the equipment outside. And then you have to route your wires down through to the basement. And
you're trying to minimize structural penetration as well.
Sure.
So they can be installed outdoors, too. So if we're going to have a second one right on the base of the TV, and then we're going to have to run 5 or 6 or however many cables we have run through all the time, right outside, we have a separate data logger for the outside equipment and so on.
You can't run your recommendation.
The next recommendation obviously is to continue the research and logging at the Talman building. The one sensor that we mentioned was giving us a flat line. I need to ensure that that's accurate. And you need to find the formula for the conversion of the millivolt readouts to the amplitude measurements. You need to install and monitor the equipment at upland hills. Obviously, the DC and AC current transducers, as well as the wind speed, solar radiation, and temperature sensors. Troy, who's the director out there, is working on getting a boom lift so we don't have to climb that tower. I don't know if you see
that tower.
Is there.
I made it up to just where the rung and ladder started, and it sort of wraps around the tower on a diagonal. And you step on the first one, and it slides about 4 inches, and it spins. And I decided I'm not climbing this today.
I'm glad you decided not to. I think you're going to get heart failure out there.
The boom lift would be an interesting thing to see, too, because from what I understand, it's partially solar powered. I think the vehicle has an engine, and then the lift runs off PV array with batteries. The one they had out there to extend the tower initially, if this is the same one they're talking about, it had the flume was powered by PV array. So if they do end up leaving that out there, that'd be something interesting to see.
By the way, just as a reminder, I forgot to take pictures of the last flume, so if you guys could pose up there at the end, I'll take a picture. Okay, sorry about that.
So our lessons learned, that we sort of touched on these a little bit as we went through the presentation. Obviously, installing this precise equipment takes a lot of time, and it can't just be, okay, I'll be out here for an hour, and then I'll leave, and you'll come out for an hour. Obviously, we all have other commitments, and it's hard for us to get out there on a Thursday afternoon. But maybe a Saturday will work for everybody, just so we can get out there and get everything in, and then you know everything that's up and running. And again, you need technical knowledge. It would have been great for someone in here who had worked with, you know, the onset and all the equipment before, but, you know, we just weren't that lucky. And then again, we talked about the 100-meter cable limit and the adapters and cable extensions. The software itself is complex. When you plug in your laptop to the data logger, there's a delay. It takes time for you don't know if you're actually linked up with it or not. It's hard to tell, at least from my experience, whether it's actually recording the data. I mean, you can see if the sensors are plugged in and the data is hard to know what's actually being recorded without giving it a period of time to actually record something. Again, we talked about the data loggers having analog inputs. And then the proper tools, we were lucky enough that Steve had just about everything we needed to get these things put in. But if he hadn't, I imagine we would probably have blown a lot of our budget not just getting the right tools.
Yeah, the fish tape alone is $67.
Yeah. What alone?
The fish tape was like $7.
Oh. Yeah.
And without that, we wouldn't have had any wires in there because it was all through conduit. And then somebody with some technical knowledge and experience, again, should be available.
I know Brent was working very diligently and speaking with us about the software and the whole thing. I know we had problems with Upland Hills and getting connected online. Is there anything from that that's
Make sure in your report you include the contact person.
Yeah, I have him on there.
They have sent also surveys on how well the equipment was working. I had not returned those because I was waiting for the class, you know, for comments. In fact, maybe I'll circulate that if you want to make comments and send them in. Thank you. And we kind of talked it through, but any other comments, questions? What do you think? It's going all weird. Okay. That's what you're doing.
Yeah, here's the wiring schematic of everything that is at Upland Hills.
The wires move there.
So up in the left-hand corner, you can see that we have the PV array. There's, what, 8?
There's actually 1. Oh, yeah, there's 28. Yeah, we've got all the touch sheets and pricing information for all this stuff that we can share with the next class.
Okay. That's their PV array?
That's their PV array.
Where's the little one that
we installed this corner right here.
Right.
And then we have the wires, and they're connected into this. This is sort of like a local disconnect box, which is just mounted right on the shaft for the tracker. And then you have here is you have 2 DC wires, and then additional 2 DC wires. These 2 coming out are going to the tracker power supply to rotate. The 2 going here are the output from the photo array. Here you have the inverter right at 3,600 watts. What this is going to do is it's going to take the DC current from here and convert it to AC to go to the sub panel. Here you have the wind turbine, which is a 1 kilowatt rated 3 phase. I forget what the voltage is, but it's 3 phase current. And then you have the junction box, which is just a local box sitting at the base of the power. and these are three-phase wires. This is inside the wind controlling disconnect for it, and then we have a wind dump load. So if you start producing too much current on this wind turbine, it's kind of burdensome. So especially in the case if the grid is out. You don't want to be supplying electricity to all your neighbors because you're going to overload the turbine. So that's what this wind dump load is for. And then right here is where it also converts this three-phase through a rectifier into a DC current or DC output, and it goes into the inverters as well. With this, is we have the battery pack, which is a 48-volt system. There's four batteries there. It's 12 volts each, four in series. And then we have the existing AC sub-panel. And then we have the new service meters. One is measuring the output, a combined total output from the wind turbine and the photoarray, and then the other one is measuring the input to the building from the grid so that they DTE can analyze, well, you're producing this much, we're going to give you this credit, kind of thing. Now, what we were going to do is we're going to pick up a DC current transducer to here and to here, and from that we can determine, well, the photoarray is producing this much DC current, the wind turbine is producing this much DC current. And then we're also going to put an AC meter here and an AC meter here. From that, we can determine based on our DC currents, the loss of how much we're losing through this inverter here, which the architect at Alpine Hill, what was his name?
Yeah. Wayne Appleyard.
Wayne Appleyard said that they're seeing at least 30% loss on typical insulation. So we just wanted to verify that and see what it was.
Also, there is a three-phase AC transducer available, but I think it was
$900.
$900. But that would be, you know, if price were no object, you know, that'd be another interesting to see. The thing to see is are we losing anything through the rectifier too? Because, you know, we don't have that piece of equipment, so we can't monitor what kind of three-phase AC we're getting. The only option we have is to measure after it goes through that rectifier and measure the DC coming in.
Would you guys have time to clean this diagram up? I realize it's doing something else. And then add where you're recommending.
Yeah.
Is it okay?
Sure.
It would be great for the recommendations and the final. You can still give credit to the original baseline diagram by Chris Cooley, the whole system.
Okay.
Yeah, I think that would be really helpful. Can I
have
a copy of that? Can you move that over
into
the box?
Oh, that's wrong. Yeah. I'll just email it. We have multiple going with your group here, I know that you did an energy audit based on estimated usage. With our equipment, you can measure actual usage. So that 6% difference could actually go down to 2% or 1% based on it, or it could actually go a little bit higher. So that would just be kind of cool to see. One additional piece of equipment that we have that we purchased that was based on the survey was a current. So it's a current on-off switch. And all it does is determine, okay, it's going to log a point when the current comes on, it's going to log a point when the current goes off. And that was going to be used based on the results that a few individuals said on the survey, well, these light oxygen sensors are not going off that night. They're staying on all the time. And we just wanted to verify that claim with some of the
documents. Well, that's not an expensive item, is it?
It's already purchased.
Oh, it's already purchased. Oh.
There's no time to go and install it.
So do you want to see if is the equipment going off or lighting? Or
it was for lighting. All it does is clamp onto a wire that's going to whatever light you want to monitor. It could be a system of lights. But it's going to send a log point for when the current comes on.
Okay.
And it's going to set a log point when it turns off.
Probably best to install it right near the junction box where we're acting as a sensor. That way, you know, you're not measuring an individual light system that's controlled by a sensor.
Measure right from the output of the. So that would be something interesting. You know, that was based off the surveys and controls. Any additional questions?
things that get really I sense that you probably felt a lot of frustration that you couldn't install what you wanted to install. But I want you to know what you came up with is very valuable to the next group. And I hope you come back to see how that gets instituted. Okay, so thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, we have one more group.